The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday. You know, Nicole Sandler here on the Progressive Voices Network and at NicoleSandler.com. I was out this morning driving around town, and wow, there are downed trees everywhere. It's easy to forget, you know, when you're in your own little bubble about the world around us. And the world around us right now ain't so great. We've been talking so much about what's happening here in Florida, not only South Florida, but the whole state of Florida after the effects of Irma, and still in Texas and Louisiana after Harvey. And, you know, not a lot of attention by some is being paid to the Virgin Islands. You know, those are some of them are U.S. territories, and some of those islands have been flattened. It's just asking you to remember that as life goes on for us, for a lot of people, they are at a standstill, and it's not great. There was some sad news yesterday, sad news that totally removed from all the other bad news we've been experiencing the last 7 or 8 months or so. And it came by way of a news item that Edie Windsor had died. Edie Windsor, and the name sounds familiar because we all fell in love with her. She was a widow who brought a landmark Supreme Court case that struck down parts of federal anti-gay marriage law and paved the way toward legalizing same-sex marriage nationwide. She died yesterday in New York. She was 88 years old. And I still have, you know, I've got sound clips going back years after years of doing the show. Sure enough, I did a search on my computer for Edie Windsor, and I found this clip from June 26, 2013. I believe it was right after the Supreme Court ruled the DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, unconstitutional.
I'm honored and humbled and overjoyed to be here today to represent not only the thousands of Americans whose lives have been adversely impacted by the Defense of Marriage Act, but those whose hopes and dreams have been constricted by the same discriminatory law. Over the past 2.5 years, many people have asked me, why did you decide to sue the United States of America over a tax bill? Because the answer is complex, I want to give you some of the background. I've lived with and loved Thea Spire for more than 4 decades, in love and joy, in sickness and in health, until death did us part. When Thea died in 2009 from a heart condition, 2 years after we were finally married, I was heartbroken. On a deeply personal level, I felt distressed and anguished that in the eyes of my government, the woman I had loved and cared for and shared my life with was not my legal spouse, but was considered to be a stranger with no relationship to me. On a practical level, due to DOMA, I was taxed $363,000 in federal estate tax that I would not have had to pay if I had been married to a man named Theo. Even if I had met Theo just immediately before, married him, and never even lived with him before he died, the tax would have been zero. So overwhelmed with a sense of injustice and unfairness, I decided to bring the lawsuit against the government to get my money back.
What a tough, amazing woman she was, Edie Windsor. Think back. That was just 4 years ago. It seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? But remember how long it took, how long people fought for the right for a couple in love to get married if they happen to be of the same sex. You know, we make these changes. The fight goes on, and it's a struggle, and it's hard work, and then the change is made, and things are so much better. Look, the Affordable Care Act was we went through that whole fight together here on this show, if you've been with me for a while, and, you know, kicking and screaming the whole way. But the fact remains that without the Affordable Care Act, I might not be sitting here today, because I'd either be dead or dying of lung cancer because I wouldn't have been able to buy health insurance. Here we are today. Just moments ago, Bernie Sanders introduced his Medicare for All Act of 2017. Now, Bernie has been working on this for, oh, a long, long time. In today's What's News, you'll hear a clip from, I think, 1991. This is him just during the presidential campaign calling for Medicare for All.
Embarrassingly, the United States today is the only major country on earth, the only one, that does not guarantee health care to all people as a right. That's right. You go to Europe, you go to Scandinavia. I live 50 miles away from Canada. Health care is a right for all people. How can we be satisfied when 28 million people in this country today have zero health insurance? How can we be satisfied when even more, and that number is growing every day, are underinsured with high deductibles and high copayments? So we got a dysfunctional system, and we are going to change that system. That is what the American people want. We are going to take on the private insurance companies. We are going to take on the drug companies. The function of healthcare in a democratic, civilized society is to provide quality care to all of our people in a cost-effective way, not to make billions of dollars in profits for the drug companies or the insurance companies or golden parachutes of $180 million for some CEO of a drug company.
And that's Bernie. He's been singing this song for decades. He's been pushing for this. And, you know, you go back even a year, and Bernie Sanders, he's been introducing some version of a Medicare for All bill for many years. And usually he does it on his own. This time, at the latest count, I believe he has 16 co-sponsors. Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire signed on at the last moment. And so there's an event going on Capitol Hill with everyone speaking, from Tammy Baldwin, Richard Blumenthal, Cory Booker. I have the whole long list of names coming up in What's News, so I don't have to go over them again. But it's exciting to see Al Franken stepped up and co-sponsored Bernie's Medicare for All Act of 2017. What a difference a lot of grassroots action makes. Now, don't think that this is all goodness and light, because on the right, they're trying it again. Lindsey Graham, I think his name is Bill Cassidy, Dean Heller and Ron Johnson have put together the Graham-Cassidy-Heller-Johnson bill. And from what I read, it looks to be even worse than any of the other repeal and replace bills that have been floated so far. And the fact that this is Lindsey Graham's bill makes me really squeamish and really nervous that John McCain might, you know, do a solid for his buddy Lindsey, because, you know, they are best pals. So they only have until the end of the month to get that done. But just know the wheels are in motion. They have not given up on it yet. They are up against the clock, and it's a tough one. But your grassroots energies may have to come out again, because who knows? We may get a CBO score on this, and they may try to push it through. So just know that that's there. But today, I want to talk about the good things that we've thought were impossible, like same-sex marriage, you know, like even Obamacare, certainly like Medicare for All, things that we thought once were impossible and now are either reality or are very, very possible. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to do What's News. We're going to come back with Ellen Ratner and then speak with our old pal Dave Johnson about all that is possible. Stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's Medicare for All Day at the U.S. Senate as Senator Bernie Sanders on Wednesday introduces his single-payer plan. Sanders has lined up 15 co-sponsors for the Medicare for All Act of 2017, including Tammy Baldwin, Richard Blumenthal, Cory Booker, Al Franken, Kirsten Gillibrand, Kamala Harris, Martin Heinrich, Maisie Hirono, Patrick Leahy, Ed Markey, Jeff Merkley, Brian Schatz, Tom Udall, Elizabeth Warren, and Sheldon Whitehouse.
And Gene Shaheen.
Although the bill has no chance of passage in a Republican-run Congress, it is already backed by most of the senators considered potential 2020 Democratic presidential candidates, and many facing tough re-election bids in 2018. Sanders has been proposing universal health care for decades. In 1991, he introduced the National Health Care and Cost Containment Act in the House.
Mr. Speaker, the American health care system is disintegrating before our eyes. 37 million Americans have no health insurance. Another 50 million are inadequately insured. Elderly citizens are unable to afford prescription drugs. And the United States today has one of the highest infant mortality rates in the world. All of this and the cost of health insurance in this country is zooming upward 15% to 20% a year, and we spend far more per capita than any other nation on earth. Yesterday, a study was released by several Harvard physicians, including Dr. Steffi Woolhandler, who is a member of my staff, which shows very clearly that if this nation moves toward a Canadian-style national health care system, we can save over $100 billion a year by doing away with the bureaucracy and paperwork inherent in our current system, which has 1,500 separate health insurance companies. In my own state of Vermont, we can save approximately $200 million a year on paperwork and put that money into health care for the people. Mr. Speaker, within the next several weeks, I will be presenting legislation to this body which finally will guarantee health care for every man, woman, and child without out-of-pocket expense. And, Mr. Speaker, we can have this plan without spending one penny more than the $700 billion we are presently spending. Thank you.
As much as we might like to think all the momentum is on our side, a small group of Republican senators is trying to resurrect, repeal, and replace. U.S. Senators Lindsey Graham, Bill Cassidy, Dean Heller, Ron Johnson, and for some reason former Senator Rick Santorum are also holding a Wednesday presser to announce their proposal to repeal the Affordable Care Act, taking one final shot before a deadline expires at the end of the month. It's a long shot, but one to keep our eyes on. A joint resolution was introduced in the House last week by Charlottesville, Virginia, Representative Tom Garrett that calls on the president to, quote, speak out against hate groups that espouse racism, extremism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, and white supremacy, and use all resources available to the president and the president's cabinet to address the growing prevalence of those hate groups in the United States. Additionally, the measure calls on Attorney General Jeff Sessions to work with the Secretary of Homeland Security and other federal agencies to investigate thoroughly all acts of violence, intimidation, and domestic terrorism by white supremacists, white nationalists, neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, and associated groups. The measure passed both chambers of Congress unanimously, clearing the House Tuesday night. It now goes to the president to officially condemn the actions of white supremacists by signing the joint resolution when it reaches his desk. According to Politico, the White House will not immediately commit to signing it. Meanwhile, President Trump is scheduled to meet one-on-one Wednesday with Senator Tim Scott, the only Republican senator who is African-American. After Charlottesville, Senator Scott told Vice News that Trump's, quote, moral authority is compromised. Scott, who endorsed Marco Rubio during the primaries, blasted Trump for his reticence in denouncing the KKK. Florida is still assessing the damage from Hurricane Irma's weekend run through the state. As emergency workers rush to find victims and deliver food and water in the Florida Keys, it's estimated that 25% of the homes there are feared destroyed. By Tuesday night, still about half of Florida's population was without electricity. Utility officials warning it could take 10 days or more for power to be fully restored. Irma's remains pushed through Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi, causing flooding and power outages in its wake, with more warnings issued around the southeast. All four TV networks and HBO aired the hand-in-hand hurricane telethon Tuesday night, raising more than $44 million for hurricane relief. Stevie Wonder kicked things off.
We've come together today to love on the people that have been devastated by the hurricanes. When love goes into action, it preferences no color of skin, no ethnicity, no religious beliefs, no sexual preferences, and no political persuasions. It just loves. as we should begin to love and value our planet. And anyone who believes that there is no such thing as global warming must be blind or unintelligent. Lord, please save us all. I got
good. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these segments and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution as we are 100% listener funded. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. And we go from what's news to the Talk Media News Service. I believe Ellen Ratner is back with us today. Ellen, are you there?
Ellen Ratner is back with you, and it's interesting that I was also going to discuss the hurricane update. What I think is interesting to add to what you were just saying is that Marriott sent a boat to take people from St. John's Island to Puerto Rico, and they would only take people that were actually registered at a Marriott hotel, even though they had seats for many more people.
Isn't that
amazing? You know, says that they're great corporate citizens.
Yeah, that's just when I heard that, my heart dropped. How could they do that? That somebody's going to be fired for that. I would guess. What a bad call.
I would hope so. Also, today on Capitol Hill, in addition to Bernie Sanders, which I'll get to in just a second, there was a group for saying that 5 years after Hurricane Sandy, they still have not been paid what they're owed. Now, a lot of people have flood insurance, but I found out because I worked in Hurricane Katrina, they did not have mold insurance. And mold insurance is what happens when, you know, the mold goes up the wall and it ruins houses. And a lot of people did not have mold insurance. So they say that they should be paid for their flood insurance, but also they did not have mold insurance.
I didn't even know there was such a thing as mold insurance. I thought flood insurance covered damages due to flooding. They get you coming and going.
Apparently.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Wow.
And we found that out the hard way with Hurricane Katrina in Mississippi. Okay, some other interesting news. Of course, Bernie Sanders just had an event. It just ended at Capitol Hill. He had many different people speaking. They all talked about health care being a right and that the Republican plan, which was unleashed at 11:30 this morning, Bernie Sanders started his at 2, talked about giving block grants to the states.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just a way for people not to get health insurance.
That's right. This is their last-ditch effort to repeal and replace. They have until the end of the month to get this through, and hopefully they can't do it. I think there's something like 17 days left, legislative days.
Judicial days, that's
right.
I mean, legislative days, that's correct.
Right. So they'd have to get a CBO score. They'd have to go through all the machinations. But I'll tell you what scares me about it is that this is Lindsey Graham's baby, and he and John McCain are best buds.
But the question is who they're going to have join them. Now, what's also interesting is the president, as you know, reached out yesterday, President Trump, to three Democrats from Republican states, from red states, to join him at dinner to talk about his tax plan. Of course, you and I haven't seen his tax plan because it doesn't exist at this point.
Right.
However, originally on his presidential schedule, it said a bipartisan meeting. Well, now it looks like it isn't a bipartisan meeting. He is meeting with the leadership of the minority of both the House and the Senate, which means the Democrats, and he's having dinner with them alone.
Yes. Tonight, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, just the three of them.
Right. Can you imagine? I think actually there's also, yes, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. You're
mm-hmm.
absolutely correct. I keep on thinking that that Pelosi is a senator, but she's not. She's
just a
representative. Okay, she maybe was Speaker of the House, and now she's Minority Leader.
Right.
Now, this is also interesting. Aung San Suu Kyi was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, as she spent years in house arrest in Myanmar, formerly Burma. And now there is a Muslim group that they are saying that her generals, et cetera, are looking the other way and killing, and they expected her to be at the United Nations. Over 300,000 people have written to a petition to the Nobel Committee to have her Peace Prize revoked.
Wow.
And so far she's not saying anything about that.
Okay.
Okay, a couple other interesting things. This was not from us, but from Hill News, but I thought it was worthy of reporting. Michael Flynn, who, as you know, is no longer at the White House, apparently filled out a form and did not put a business deal or a business trip he took to explore a business deal with the Saudi government and a Russian government agency. Now, I happen to have some friends that do work for the Trump administration, and one of them, who had been to South Sudan with me, called me several times to make sure that I talked about exactly who we met with, so he was completely accurate on his form. So to not put something like a meeting or a trip even
right
on your form is absolutely an intentional overlook.
Well, this is par for the course for some of these people. Michael Flynn has omitted a lot of stuff, as has Jared Kushner.
Right. And actually, there are some people who believe that apparently in the White House, they asked that Jared Kushner leave, and Trump X'd that out. He nixed it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Can you imagine? It's kind of crazy. Okay, some other news just to sort of finish us off. Hillary Clinton today gave her first public interview since losing the election on NBC. It was to get publicity for her book, What Happened. She said that about Donald Trump Jr. meetings, it's ridiculous. It's another absurd lie to cover up what really was going on, which I hope we finally uncover and understand.
I'm at a loss about this book. I have not read it, I'll say that. And I've heard that it's actually a very personal, interesting, you know, easy to read book, that there's a lot of, you know, insight there. But my goodness, everything I'm reading about it is just like her pointing fingers and blaming other people for her loss.
Well, as I say, you know, she should be like an Al Gore. Al Gore found a whole nother thing that is important to him. He has made climate change his signature issue. If you think about climate change, you think about Al Gore, and he has done a very good job with that. And she needs to find something to do a good job with.
Yeah, this sounds like a lot of sour grapes. Look, I understand. I get why she's upset. But, you know, at a time when the Democratic Party really needs to get its act together and stop with the infighting, she's opening up a whole lot of old wounds and I think leveling some really unfair charges against Bernie Sanders.
Well, I do too. And Bernie did not deal at all with that today during his announcement for healthcare.
Nor would I expect him to.
And he should.
Well, not during his announcement for healthcare, though.
Right. But, right. I mean, I think he shouldn't even, you know, justify responding to her. Just let her talk and let her sell her books and move on.
And then go
also, on. Also, one last thing. There is something called a blue slip. It's different in the House than in the Senate. In the Senate, you need a blue slip from the two senators from your state if you want to get nominated. Well, it looks like Al Franken is not doing that for this associate justice from Minnesota.
Right.
Minnesota. And it turns out there's a group called the Judicial Crisis Network, and they are buying ads in the state to make sure that Al Franken does not make any headways with this, et cetera. I don't know if it's going to be successful or not. I'm hearing that Al Franken is not worried about being reelected.
Wow. So if he doesn't turn in this blue slip, then this judge does not get appointed.
Well, yes. If it is interesting, you usually have to get, I don't know what the Senate rules are on this. They're, you know, complicated. So I don't know that that would not totally stop him from getting the hearings, et cetera. But generally, it has been that they both senators from the state usually even introduce the person during the hearings. That clearly isn't going to happen this time, but I don't know that it won't go through the nomination process.
You know, there's one other thing that that you didn't touch on, Ellen, that as of yesterday, when the House passed this joint resolution against neo-Nazis, and I don't know if you heard about it. It was a joint resolution passed both chambers
of
Congress.
Absolutely, and it was passed unanimously by voice vote.
Right. And as of yesterday, according to Politico, the White House wasn't sure they were going to sign it. Well, today in her briefing, Sarah Sanders said that the president and Tim Scott talked about Trump's reaction to Charlottesville and said that he will sign that bill to denounce white supremacists. I just find it amazing that
he's about to sign it. I'll tell you why. Because it passed unanimously.
That's right.
So they can override a veto.
Right. But how could he not sign it? I mean, it's denouncing white supremacy and neo-Nazis. It's the whole thing that this is even an issue that we're talking about.
Because you have Donald Trump as president of the United States. That's why.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. Ellen Ratner, it's good to talk with you again. We'll be doing every week. Thanks. Thank you. Bye-bye. Ellen Ratner from the Talk Media News Service. They're at talkmedianews.com. They're back with us Wednesday through Friday here on The Nicole Sandler Show. We'll take a break and come back on the other side with our friend Dave Johnson. He used to be with the Center, the Campaign for America's Future, and the Center for Media and Democracy. These days, he's just blogging on his own. But he and I were talking about things that used to be out of reach that now, you know, aren't. They're, same-sex marriage is a prime example. And as of today, I really think Medicare for All is within reach. It's something that we can do only, though, through grassroots energy. That's how we get there. That's how Bernie Sanders had zero co-sponsors the last time he introduced this. And today he had 16 of them. And not only 16 fellow senators standing up there, but the people most likely to run for the Democratic nomination in 2020, whether it's Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or Kirsten Gillibrand. It's an impressive list. And Al Franken, who's pretty centrist, for Al Franken to come out and co-sponsor, that's a big deal. Or as Joe Biden would say, a big fucking deal. All right, take a break. We'll come back with Dave Johnson next.
Billions of dollars needed now for federal hurricane relief. Where can Congress find so much money? I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Donald Trump loves it when crowds at his raucous right-wing rallies stand and chant in red-faced fury, "Build that wall! Build that wall!" So he keeps fanning their fire by repeatedly promising to wall off Mexico with a multi-billion dollar, quote, "big, beautiful barrier on the border." "We must have the wall," he tweeted in late August, promising again that, quote, "Mexico will pay for it." The problem with his bombastic promises, however, is that they turn out to be duds. Even Trump knows that building that wall is nothing but PR trumpery. In a phone call to President Peña Nieto, he admitted that Mexico actually was not going to pay a single peso for the offensive border partition, but he begged his cross-border counterpart to stop saying so publicly, for Mexico's adamant refusal to pay was exposing Trump, the dealmaker, as a weakling. Still, he loudly threatened again on August 21st to close down our government if Congress doesn't pony up billions to fund his pet project. But just 4 days later, reality intervened when a mass migration poured across the U.S. border. Not a migration of Mexicans, but of floodwaters from the Gulf of Mexico. Hurricane Harvey's biblical level of destruction not only swamped cities and communities all along the Texas-Louisiana coastline, but it has also swamped Congress with a tsunami of demands from GOP state officials for as much as $180 billion in federal relief, not counting Hurricane Irma. This is Jim Hightower saying, ironically, Trump and his gang of anti-big government congressional zealots were about to cut nearly $1 billion from the federal disaster aid budget when Harvey hit the coast. Now, they're scrambling to add multiple billions of dollars to that budget just to rebuild what Harvey destroyed. Where to get the money? Start by zeroing out every dime that would be frittered away on Donald's folly.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a Lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener-supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
Olson Johnson is right. I say we stay and fight it out.
Dr. Samuel Johnson's right about Olson Johnson's being right. And I'm not giving up my ice cream parlor that I built with these two hands for nothing or nobody.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
Johnson's right. Correct. It's Dave Johnson on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Dave Johnson, your intro cut out right there in the middle.
Yeah, right. I was trying to impress a friend by playing it for her, too.
We could try it again if you want.
No, that's all right.
It's my computer. It's being a bad boy today. Anyway, Dave Johnson. So I was talking about things that used to be seemingly out of reach. Things like same-sex marriage, you know, thinking that we would never get to it. And then, all of a sudden, here we are, after a lot of grassroots hard work and effort and fighting. And I brought that up, marking the death of Edie Windsor, who passed away yesterday. Even the Affordable Care Act, when I look back on all those years of struggling and wondering, you know, how I was going to be able to afford health insurance, not only me, but millions of people in my same position, anyone with a pre-existing condition who didn't work for an employer who provided health insurance. And then we got that. And now it's seeming like, you know what, Medicare for All is something that certainly should happen. It happens. It's available in every other civilized nation around the country, around the world, but ours. And now with Bernie Sanders introducing it today with 16 co-sponsors, it makes me feel a little bit better, like this too is possible.
Yep, yep. They say things happen slowly and then suddenly. I know you've heard that. Gay marriage. Remember how politicians were always very calculating and crafty and how they would talk about it? And, oh, well, I'm not sure I'm for marriage. Maybe civil unions.
That's
da-da-da.
Right.
You know, they were very careful about it. But later, that cost them, didn't it?
It did.
Hillary found that out. A lot of people found that out, that their carefully calculated positions explaining why they did the wrong thing later on kind of showed up as, hey, they did the wrong thing. Iraq war vote, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of these things that were careful political calculations and considerations and were not just saying we need to do the right thing. I think, and I got to preface everything I say today on assuming we survive Trump, of course.
Right.
Yeah. Sigh. But I think we've seen a big shift in how people are going to tolerate things from the people that they are choosing to vote for or not. That's what I think we're seeing here. And I think, I mean, Medicare for All is just so obvious, but so many other things, too. But we should probably talk about some of the specifics of Bernie's plan, I guess. Certainly.
So the bill was released today. It's something like 96 pages, so I did not have a chance to read the whole thing. But it's pretty comprehensive. It does include dental and vision and drugs, prescription drugs, which are negotiated with the pharmaceuticals, things that make sense, which, you know, just have not been done because our politicians are bought and paid for by the lobbyists.
Right. Well, the concept is simple, but first thing to say about it is you introduce a plan like this, but as it goes through Congress, you have hearings, you have experts, you have other people weigh in. Like for example, part of this bill was written by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand's office.
Yeah.
For example. Okay. So you start getting experts to weigh in. The point being that you say, look, this is what we want to do. Then, you know, the details can fill themselves in. But the first important thing here is that how many people are signing on. I think it was 170 Democrats in the House. We're up to 15 senators on 16. Something that was unthinkable.
Do you believe 16? Gene Shaheen was a last-minute addition.
Joe Manchin says it's worth considering. Here's one. Max Baucus, he's not a senator now, but he was the guy who blocked it when they were doing Obamacare. He says, yeah, we ought to look at this now.
Okay, but so the fact that Joe Manchin said we ought to look at it, then he sort of took a step back. He's like, I'm not saying that that's the best system, but certainly I want to see how they do it in other countries and how it all works, which is what they should be saying.
The end goal is what matters here, rather than getting mired in details, which I see a lot of the Clinton types are all, well, how are they going to do? No, you say we want Medicare for all, and then you implement Medicare for all somehow. That's
but
how you do these things.
Can I just say something? One thing that, and I keep hearing the people on the cable news do this too. Yeah, people are all for it, you know, hey, Medicare for all, until they find out their taxes are going to go up to pay for it. but then you don't have a health insurance premium for however much
you're
paying.
You don't have copays.
You don't have deductibles. And no monthly premium. So just take your premium that you're paying, pay it in with your taxes, which will, you know, it'll all just come out in the wash. But you won't have the copays, you won't have the deductibles, you won't have the, you know, all those niggling little charges that add up and make it so that you have to, you can't get your prescriptions filled.
You don't have $20 million salaries for healthcare company CEOs.
That's right.
Yeah. And here's one you don't have that isn't being mentioned yet, but it's going to dawn on a lot of people. Every doctor's office, dental office, et cetera, that I know of spends a huge amount of time and money just dealing with insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
That goes away. So, yeah. But, yeah, the thing is, okay, so you trade, you know, hundreds of dollars a month in insurance premiums, and so do employers.
Right.
That's huge. Employers, okay. What Bernie wants to do, he's proposing, you know, and the end result might be different. It doesn't matter once we all finally say, hey, we're going to go for this. So, but what he's proposing is you start phasing in Medicare. First of all, you expand Medicare with dental, vision, hearing aids, a few other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you immediately, first year, Medicare goes to 55 and for all kids up to 18. Okay, what happens? Wait, just stop there. Suddenly, Medicaid. Suddenly, the children's health insurance program, suddenly all the money we spend on those instead are available.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then the next year I think it's 45, then the year after that it's 35, and then the year after that everybody gets it.
Right.
So you phase in Medicare, and you bring children in, and here's a fascinating thing. You drop Medicare to 55, and the first thing, what you're doing is you're getting people that cost a hell of a lot less than the current Medicare people onto Medicare.
Right.
So per person, it's a lot less. Okay, but the other thing you do is you get the most expensive people on private insurance off of private insurance and onto Medicare. So that cost drops dramatically too. Okay, so then you drop it to 45 and 35 and everybody like that. So that's the basics of his plan, but there's no copays, no deductibles, no premiums. And it also covers hearing and vision, so and dental. Dental.
Which, you know what? I just had to have a root canal, and now I'm waiting to get the crown put on the tooth. This $2,500.
Yeah. Okay. So there's $2,500. Oh, but Nicole, your taxes might go up $100 a year.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Where
so
do
that's
I sign
the
up?
Basics of. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Here's the thing. It just makes so much sense. It's just so obvious. And it's been fought for so long by the vested interests, you know, what we call the moneyed interests, whatever you want to call it. And they've had this ability to manipulate the thinking of, especially of people in office, you know, because they'll say, well, you'll be up against millions of dollars of our donations against somebody else. So, you know, all these things that have happened. All of these, well, it's not possible because it's not possible. Well, the only thing that's possible is the thing you say, let's do it. Okay, so isn't this wonderful? I mean, it's like you feel like, every, as you said earlier, every Democrat who wants to run for president has figured this out.
They've all signed on. These 16, the list is pretty stunning.
Right.
To see, you know, from Cory Booker to Kirsten Gillibrand to, obviously Elizabeth Warren. Al Franken surprised me. I really didn't expect, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised by a few of these. And then, all day after, an exhaustive day yesterday where one after another, I kept seeing these Twitter notifications that another senator had signed on and another one had signed on. And then this morning I saw Jean Shaheen got in there. So she's the 16th.
Yep. Well, Sherrod Brown, who I hope is running for president, he supports a different one with the same goal. So,
and Chris Murphy as well. Chris Murphy supports a plan that you can buy into Medicare.
Yeah.
I wish he would have signed on to this as well. I mean, it wouldn't have hurt anything.
All of these lead to the same end result, any way you look at it. And just suppose everybody just gets Medicare as it is now. And I'm old, so I've been through, helping someone get Medicare, and it's complicated, and it's weird, and there's all this and
that. Well, I'll tell you, what's complicated about it is the supplemental plan. So
Part D and E, the drugs, and all that. Yeah, sure. But here's the thing, that after, let's just say we get that, it's already better than what we have, but then everybody has an investment in making it all better, too, after that. And every politician will, too. So, and it saves the economy, never mind taxpayers. It saves the economy tremendous amounts of money, efficiency. American companies, aren't putting up that kind of money so they can compete easier internationally on pricing, all kinds of things.
Well, this
suddenly just gets so much better.
About the American companies not putting up that money, this is such an important point. And I always thought this is where the right would be coming to the party on this. Employers should not be paying for their employees' health insurance. It's a burden, it's unfair, and it's unnecessary. We all pay our own fair share in the form of taxes. Forget your health insurance premium anymore. Forget the employer contribution and the employee contribution, which every year, if you have health insurance through an employer, your share of it has been going up and up and up and up. That would all go away. Yes, you'd pay a little more in taxes, but that would cover everybody.
Well, also the philosophy of it changes because the insurance companies have a profit motive still to keep you from getting the things, paying for things that you need. They have a profit motive to do that. And when you change it to we, the people, providing each other with this through government, suddenly the whole nature of it changes too. We want to help people get their care. We want to help them have good preventative services. But when they're sick, we want people to have the best care, not the cheapest. And things like that start to change.
Mm-hmm.
So but the bigger picture of this, when you combine it with this idea of what happened with gay marriage, what's happening with other things, is suddenly Democrats are recognizing that doing the right thing is good politics too. And that's a huge change from the world we've been living in since the famous Clinton politics of the 90s, That whole political calculation, get the corporate money, try to use the corporate money because then you're in and you can do some good, maybe, et cetera. But the corporate money corrupts you. But suddenly, this is the big thing that Bernie has changed and that Jeremy Corbyn changed in England, is that doing the right thing suddenly is the right politics, too.
I'm hearing
everything
Obama going, it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Yeah.
And it is. It just is. And all of a sudden, at least on the Democratic side, it's going to be all about we the people and what's best for we the people. And I think that no voters on the Democratic side, everybody recognizes it because of Bernie. There's this all, Bernie lost the primary. Yeah, well, Bernie started late, didn't have any money, was afraid to do anything at first because of that. And then he shattered all of those perceptions. I think nobody was more surprised than Bernie was about what happened.
I think you're right.
And I think everything changed. And I think part of what happened in those primaries was when Hillary Clinton decided she was going to have to differentiate herself from Bernie by going against Medicare for All, saying, well, you can't get it. It's not practical. It's not possible. The insurance companies won't let you have all that stuff. You know, she probably supports Medicare for All. She supported gay marriage, but said she didn't, remember?
Right. Yes.
And she did.
Yeah.
Because she was a practical, calculating politician. Can't blame her for the environment she came from, I guess. And Bernie came along, and everything's different now. Everything. No Democrat is going to, for example, Hillary said, Hillary's whole game was to make sure she grabbed up all the donors before anybody else did,
mm-hmm.
so nobody could run against her. And Bernie has now broken that. Now people know that if you go out and you say, I want to do the right thing, that people will donate to you.
And you can get raise as much or more money with small dollar contributions as you can from a few big dollar contributors.
Right, right. Hillary, I still say Hillary did the right thing too late. I also think, personally, Hillary might have been a better president than Obama in a lot of ways, but that's an aside. I know I'm starting flame wars here, but Hillary was not the right candidate for the times, and that whole style of politics went out when Bernie had the success he had. Everybody running for president now sees that and is signing on to Medicare for All. We're going to see so many changes in the thinking, I think, on the progressive side of things after this. Bernie won the primary when it comes to the ideas.
Yeah, he most definitely did. Dave Johnson is with us. You can find Dave on the Twitter machine at DC Johnson. His blog is seeingtheforest.com, though he's been lacking of late, not writing so much.
Hiding.
I get it. Look, I've been in hiding too. These have been some tough months we've been living through, and it's nice to have a day like today when there's something we can celebrate and we can see tangible evidence that the ideas are catching on. That some of the more establishment senators have signed on to Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill. That's a big deal. Because a year ago, we didn't see this. A year ago, it was Bernie out there alone with millions and millions of rabid followers, but nobody else in the Democratic Party standing with him on an idea like this.
And one of the big changes we're going to see is that whole corporate big donor money thing with the Democratic Party, all of a sudden, that's not the way to win, it's the way to lose.
Hmm.
I really think that that's part of what we're seeing happening here is the embracing of the right thing to do rather than what you need to do to get that corporate money. The shift that's happening, I don't think you're going to be able to run in a primary in the Democratic Party as the establishment candidate getting all that corporate money. I just don't see that as a path anymore they try to get that money to run all the ads and everything. I just don't see that any longer as a path that Democratic primary voters will tolerate.
I think you're right.
That there's been a shift.
You know, I didn't read the book, but in Hillary Clinton's book, apparently one of the things that she says she would do differently is she wouldn't have given all those speeches to Goldman Sachs for all that money. I bet she, well, I don't know if she would have or not. I bet she regrets it. But I think we're not going to stand for that anymore. The interesting thing is, though, you know, on the right, you had Trump run on drain the swamp. Meanwhile, his swamp has only filled in with more swamp people. And on the left, we've seen the draining of the swamp. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Well, Trump's got a really good sense of what the people out there, he's like he's got a pollster living in his head in some ways. He's really good at that. But he never, ever means any of it at all. You know, he sees out there what a lot of people are thinking, and he can echo it really well. But that doesn't mean he's going to do any of it, you know.
Right.
Trump brought in the swamp like nobody's ever seen. Oh, my God.
All the while saying drain the swamp.
It.
Right. It's amazing.
Yeah, he understood it. Mm-hmm. Trump is the epitome of saying anything he needs to say at the moment, I think. He's very good at that. And people should learn from the themes that Trump pursued, you know, the stagnant wages, the trade deals that shift jobs out of the country, the swamp, you know, the corruption and everything. And then he's the epitome of all of that, yes. But he at least was good at campaigning on that, I think. So I want to bring up something I want to talk about as another thing that we should all start understanding as possible.
And this is a really hard topic to understand, because I know where you're going. Modern monetary theory. And I've had Stephanie Kelton on the show a number of times, and as many times as I talk about it with her and try to put it in the simplest terms, to which I think I understand, it's still kind of hard to understand. But it also goes to, you know, the arguments against Medicare for All are going to be, well, you know, it costs too much, right? That's always their argument about anything good we want to do. It costs too much. And in MMT, that's a non sequitur. It doesn't matter, does it? Or does it?
Right. Right. People, money and finance is a very funny topic. People don't really understand what money even is. You know, they think money is dollars in your pocket. Well, if you look at that dollar, the money says it's a promise to pay. That's all it is. Okay. Here's a simple one. How is any money in our economy created? Well, the way it's created is the bank gives someone a loan. That's it. Money comes from lending and borrowing. Okay, so that's all an introduction to the strangeness of the idea. It's like when I learned how to speak Japanese and it's called subject-object-verb. You know, you have to speak like Yoda. It's a different wiring of the brain these ideas about money. But the basics of modern monetary theory is understanding that the United States prints its own currency. It issues its own currency. The way we pay for things is pretty simple. We just pay for them. You don't have to get money in to the United States government to pay for something. The United States government can just say, here's a check, go build this. Okay, what happens is that if they do that way too much, you start getting a lot of money circulating and you start getting inflation.
Mm-hmm.
So the real limit on how much money the government can actually borrow, they call it borrowing, they're actually issuing money. The only limit on that is when there's so much out there that people start demanding a lot more of it. They see there's a lot of it around. So they start demanding more of it before they'll do something in exchange. And that's inflation. So in other words, when the full faith and credit of the government is high, all of that money that the government just spends is worth a lot. So they could just spend it. And if they spend so much eventually that nobody trusts that the government, you know, that this government will ever provide you with something in exchange, then that money becomes worth less, so things cost more. But everybody talks about how high the debt is. Here's a way to look at how high the debt is. Is inflation high or low?
Right,
it's really
now?
Low.
Yeah.
So that means there's not enough money in the economy. I'll give you another way to look at how high the debt is. You can borrow money at 1%, you know, or 2%. If you open up a bank account, what are you getting? An eighth of a percent, a quarter of a percent or something, okay?
Right.
In other words, the money is extremely valuable right now. Their government is not borrowing enough is what, and you ready for this? The markets are saying by pricing money at this kind of, it's a price for money, meaning you get low interest rates. That means the markets are telling us the demand is really, really high for money. The markets are begging the U.S. government to print more money, to issue more money. In other words, to put out more treasury bills until the rate on those bills rises, meaning the price of the bills is lower. Okay, that's complicated still. And a lot of us are trying to find ways to word that make more sense. But
right.
There's a conference coming up in Kansas City in a few weeks. It's called the Modern Monetary Theory Conference. People can go to mmtconference.org. But what's going to come out of that is a lot of people finding ways to explain this a little better. Government is not borrowing enough is one way to understand it. But what you really need to understand is that all of these things, health care for all, infrastructure, all the roads and bridges we need without having to pay some corporation to use it, all the education, college education for free, all of these things we can just have if we just decide to. The only restraint, they've been using this deficit scare as a restraint. The only real restraint is that inflation is low now. If inflation starts to get really, really high, then the government needs to soak up some of that money. I can think of a lot of billionaires they could soak it up from.
Oh, so can I. But then what's the whole deal with us borrowing so much money from China, for example?
We have a deal with China where we're offshoring so much of our manufacturing, and then we pay a bunch of money to get it back. And so China gets treasury bills. Usually that's a good thing. But in the United States, we have policies that keep employment, that keep unemployment high in order to keep wages from rising, which they call inflation.
Mm-hmm.
We have all these policies. Imagine if we had full employment, if anybody could get a job. Let's say the government said, okay, if you can't get a job, you know, we'll pay you to be a teacher or a teacher's assistant or work in a nursing home. So if we had a situation where anybody in the United States could get a job, employers would have to compete.
Yes.
With us.
Right.
They'd have to offer things like, well, now they could offer health care. They'd have to start offering us things to
good
work
wages,
for them.
Right.
Wages would go up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you want to send, when the economy gets to full employment, all of a sudden the economy is losing its ability to do better and better because there aren't enough people to do the work. And all of a sudden immigration becomes a really good thing instead of competing for jobs. All of a sudden offshoring menial labor becomes a good thing. And it becomes a good thing for the places you offshore it to if you have good policies that help them get paid more. If the immigrants help them get paid more, you see, that's how an economy could work and should work when it's done for the people. And that's how a government budget could work if it was done for the people. But the way we do it now, we fight inflation, okay? And all of these things we do because that keeps the control, the power, and the wealth in a few hands instead of it being all spread around by us having access to good jobs at high pay, good benefits, instead of us having all of these things that we could have good infrastructure, good environment, good education. So this whole idea of modern monetary theory is of a piece with all of these other things that people are starting to realize, I think.
Well, I hope so. And
assuming, Nicole,
yeah.
Assuming we survive Trump.
Assuming, and that's a big assumption. The conference is at mmtconference.org, and that's just in a few weeks?
Yeah, in Kansas City, September 21st, I think.
So see, even that...
I'm only bringing this out now because you'll start hearing about this concept later, and the sophisticated people who listen to Nicole's podcast can start early.
Oh, okay. Now, we've talked about it before. And again, each time I talk about it, I kind of get a little bit of a grasp on it, and I still don't quite understand it. But the bottom line is, you know, we print the money. Basically, we have, mm-hmm. you want to spend money on something, then let's spend money on something. And
exactly.
And you're good doing it until, you know, if inflation starts rising, then you pull back a bit. But until then,
you tax the rich a bit more.
Well, gee, that sounds like a really good idea. Instead,
so
we have
all of a sudden you get the idea of who's against it and why.
Right. Instead, we have Trump wanting to cut taxes at a time when we have these two natural disasters, these monstrous hurricanes, and we're going to have to spend a lot of money. What's his solution? Let's cut taxes on the rich.
Well, see, that's a form. That's actually a form of this whole concept of pumping money into the economy is a good thing until it's. If you want to prioritize.
We're going to run out of time here, Dave Johnson.
Well, he's pumping it to the rich.
He's pumping it to the rich instead of down to the people who really need it. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Dave Johnson.
Into the infrastructure and such.
There you go. Seeingtheforest.com is the blog. You can find him on Twitter at DC Johnson. Dave Johnson, it is always a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you later. Bye. Tomorrow, Howie Klein is back. Yay! Stay safe, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. It's the Nicole Sandler Show. We're out.